Hello, I'm Nadia. I'm a One Young World ambassador and the president of the European Young Engineers, and I'm in the Extreme Hangout right now.
Okay, so the title above us here is A Life Without Carbon. What will your life be like without carbon?
I'm doing research on the bioeconomy, so it would be bio-based. But I'm also a chemical engineer, saying we won't have a life without carbon itself, because bio-based products are also carbon-based. But we should have a life where the carbon we emit is in balance with what the planet can bear. So.
Yeah, I remember my organic chemistry, so you're absolutely right about that, unless it becomes silicon-based or something. So what's your biggest takeaway from this particular session?
I do feel really encouraged from people from all walks of life here, like from the building sector, from the forestry sector, all looking into the same ideal. And this is how I think it should be collectively done. It should be interdisciplinary, it should be intergenerational, intersectional, like how we achieve goals together to the same goal.
And how do you feel COP26 has inspired you to change the way you live?
It's hard to say, because I do think my mantra was already before I came to COP, but I'm inspired that there are so many people who care about COP, also like from high level to just me or 18-year-old people who coming together all for the same purpose. And nobody really cares about like your title in the end, but more about the purpose for many that I met. And this is what I think is most important, not who you are, but like where we all want to go together.
And the next question here, I guess you're already making change. Do you think you'll make even more meaningful change as a result of what's coming out from COP and other reports?
I think, to be honest, not a lot, because I'm already doing this kind of work. But I'm rather pushing people to think more in this way. So, for example, here the audience might not have so much contact with the European Young Engineers, what happens in the European technology field, or from the urban circular bioeconomy. And if I can incentivize the people who have not yet cared about so many climate-related things, for whom the climate change is not as visible yet, if I can help them to look at this a little bit more, this would be helpful enough for me.
And if there was one word that best sums up how you feel about the challenge ahead and the future of the planet, what would it be?
We need to be brave.
Brave. Brave is a good one.
Yeah, brevity.
Thank you so much.
I'm Kunle Bark. I'm COO of Melt Property and a non-exec director at Studio Anyo, and I'm at the Extreme Hangout.
Great. So with all these things that you do, how is a world without carbon or decarbonisation affecting your world?
Well, you know, the built environment plays a big part in our carbon footprint. So there's 27 million homes in the UK, and the built environment in general contributes about 40% of the UK's carbon footprint. So there's lots going on in the architectural industry at the moment, looking at operational carbon, that's the carbon it takes to light and heat your building, embodied carbon, so that's the carbon in the products that you use to make the buildings, and then life cycle carbon, so what happens after that building is past its use and you demolish it, what can you do with those materials? And if you can sort of link all of those together, it really, really reduces the amount of carbon that the built environment is producing.
People don't really appreciate, they're quite surprised when they hear about 40%. I was speaking to the mayor of Seattle, and their policy, there are just two areas they're looking at, and one of those is the built environment.
Yeah, no, we just don't think about it. I mean, you know, that's obviously not just our homes. That's our homes, schools, sports centres, you know, everything that we build. But we've got to think about how we build materials. So, you know, for example, concrete. I mean, if concrete were a country, it would be the third biggest carbon emitter in the world. So we've got to, but the industry's thinking about how we can use low carbon concrete or use different materials. We're looking at using things like modular construction, which reduces waste by like 70%. Different types of materials, well, natural materials. So we were talking about fleece earlier. Well, there's lots of examples of fleece being used as an insulator rather than the products that are made from petrochemicals. So other than probably the automotive industry, I think the built environment, particularly architecture, is one of the industries that's really forward thinking.
I met a farmer the other day who said he built his house out of hemp.
Yeah, hemp is a great material, ancient material, really well, really good for insulating, completely sustainable, and really easy to use, so you can kind of do it yourself. It's fantastic.
So how is, I don't know, when I say COP26, the moment, influencing or adding reinforcement to the way you're changing your life?
I mean, we're pretty sustainable anyway. We've always been like that, and we did lots of things. You know, we've been with OVO since they began. Actually, I remember when they, you know, I wanted to be with somebody who was more sustainable. But I think the interesting thing about COP is it gives us a platform for me to talk to you here, for me to be on ITV News, for the TV show that I've just done. Everybody is talking about sustainability, and whilst that is fantastic, what I'm really interested in what happens afterwards. As my grandma used to say, the proof in the pudding is in the eating. So let's see what happens after COP.
Yeah. Well, we'll all be eating climate humble pie, no doubt.
I hope not.
And for you, like, is there one word, a word association for saving the planet at the moment for you?
Consume less. I know that's more than one word, but yeah, consume less.
We'll hyphenate it. I'll get away with that. Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Becky Heaton. I'm Director of Sustainability at OVO, and I'm at the Extreme Hangout.
Well, I guess you're both sides of, you know, a life without carbon, you know, in terms of your job and what you're doing for consumers of energy, and I dare say in your own life as well.
Yes, I mean, I try and live a low carbon life. I have an EV. I love my EV. It's fantastic. I never have to go near a petrol station. That's great. I grow most of my own vegetables, so that's fantastic too. I'm lucky that I've never been that keen on going on foreign holidays, so I love getting on trains and having mad train journeys across Europe. That to me is part of the holiday. Going off with my bivy bag on my tent into the hills of Mid Wales, that keeps me very, very happy.
I don't know what you hear from OVO consumers, but do you find people are now more ready to adapt their lifestyles because of the benefits it will have?
Absolutely, and I think what we're hearing is not can we, shall we, but how. So it's really about the how, and we have a tool called Greenlight, which helps customers really understand how they're using their energy. It's actually really quite interesting. You can sort of see which bits are using most and switch it off and manage that, but we're also trying to sort of produce information just to help people understand how to decarbonize other parts of their life as well, other than the energy part.
So how is COP26, or certainly this moment, influencing you in how you're changing or continuing to change your life?
I just think it's great to see all of this force behind potential change. So, you know, as I've said earlier, I've been doing this for 25 years when people didn't know what a COP was. So I feel very positive that we are all here talking, that it is number one on the news headlines. So what does it mean for me personally? It's made me look at my life again and say, am I really doing my bit? Am I sort of walking the talk? I think I'll probably try and eat a little bit less meat. So I do want to support farmers. I do think we can have some meats in our diet, but I should probably just cut down a little bit more than I'm doing. So I'm going to start cooking a bit more vegan meals, I think.
A little more flexitarian.
Yes, yeah.
And again, if there was one word that summed up for you the challenge ahead for saving the planet, what might it be?
Oh my gosh. I think it's behavioural change, nudges. You know, 62% of the decarbonisation routes in the UK are going to involve people changing how they live their lives. We're here with people who are really committed. There's a lot of people who aren't in this room, who aren't even in Glasgow, who probably don't even know the changes which are ahead.
I'm Hannah Dillon. I'm head of the Zero Carbon Campaign, and I'm at the Extreme Hangout today.
So you're at the coalface, if you pardon that horrible pun, of this whole thing. So for you, what have you got out of this session in terms of, I know, the consensus that's emerging?
Yeah, so I think it was a really good session because there were so many different perspectives being brought in terms of like the role that technology can play in driving low carbon, but also people can play and policy can play. So that's really good. I don't think there was quite a lot of agreement, which often happens in these circles, but there's a few nuances as well. I think some people are looking at this from a perspective of people that can afford to make changes in their lives, whereas one of the things that we look at is what about people that have to choose between heating their home and eating food, and how can we help them engage in a low carbon transition, because fair enough, it's kind of at the bottom of their priorities right now.
I think there's a quote, and I may have to paraphrase it, but those who can least afford it will be affected the worst and the soonest, and those who can most afford it will be affected the least and latest.
Yeah, and that is absolutely true on a domestic level, but a global level too, right? Climate change will disproportionately affect poorer communities, people of colour, low-lying communities. But in the UK, it's going to start, you know, the costs of this transition are going to affect the people that can afford at least to start with. But also the responsibility is generally, if you look at the statistics, on people with more money, because they fly more and they use more energy and they spend more money on cars, and all of that stuff contributes to a bigger carbon footprint. And that's why one of our arguments as a campaign is that those with the bigger carbon footprints and more money should pay more towards the cost of the transition, so that we can protect vulnerable households and low-income households from having to do that.
So would you say the challenges are not just therefore environmental, they're societal, you know, in terms of the stresses that are going to emerge, either in, I guess, the Western Northern Hemisphere versus maybe conflict and resource wars and all the other impacts in the more disadvantaged parts of the world?
Yeah, I'd absolutely say that climate change is a social justice issue, and that to treat it in isolation and forget all of that means you're just not going to solve the problem. I mean, you can't ask people in poverty to buy an electric car. I mean, that's a dramatic example. You can't solve the food crisis without treating food poverty as poverty itself. And one of the things that we talk about a lot is thinking about the poverty risks in the net zero transition and moving away from a situation where you're using your kind of have a policy approach that tries to do no harm towards a holistic policy approach that uses environmental policy to actively do good from a poverty alleviation perspective, both domestically and internationally. Because if you don't consider all of these other things, I mean, you mentioned migration, climate change is going to force people to move. What are we going to do about that? So I think to treat it as anything other than a social justice issue is to totally misunderstand the point.
So big issues ahead. What does COP26 and everything that's happening at the moment mean for you? How is it influencing you, either personally or in your drive, in your role?
It's been really important for us for the last 2 years now. It was going to be 1 year, it got delayed, because it's a really good opportunity to hold the government's feet to the fire, so we can say, maybe you shouldn't vote to keep dumping sewage in our seas a week before you're hosting a climate conference. Maybe we shouldn't build a new coal mine. Maybe we shouldn't build new oil fields. So it's really important from that sense, and from the sense of bringing different countries together. But it's also important that we don't pin everything on this. Like, if COP is a failure, that doesn't mean we've failed. It means we just have to fight harder and be louder. I think it's also been a really great opportunity for marginalized groups, young people, indigenous people, to come out and show the role that they can play, but also, you know, share their perspectives on this. I mean, I did a workshop with a bunch of young people on Tuesday, and they're not here for COP. They're here on the fringes of COP to meet people that they believe are going to make the change, because they don't think the politicians are going to do it. You know, it's not necessarily my perspective. I think you need all sections of society to play their role. But yeah, COP really important, but let's not forget that there is a COP every single year after this, and it's not the only forum we have to have these discussions.
So if there was one word that summed up the challenge as you see it, maybe from your professional role for saving the planet, or at least for your agenda, what might it be?
Rhetoric. Moving from rhetoric to action. So our campaign that we're here with, we've done a big mural, we've got some art up here in the Extreme Hangout, is about, you know, words can be really pretty and politicians can say really nice things, but actually it's about the action associated with that and the role that people, movements, businesses have on ensuring there's a link between the two. So we are actually designing up with a bunch of youth activists, artists, all the pretty words that are coming out of COP. We're going to deliver them to those world leaders as a reminder that you actually said this and now you need to deliver on it. And they can have some nice artwork in their homes, but hopefully it reminds them that they've got a responsibility to deliver on the rhetoric that they are using at COP.
I guess, as I think it was Greta Thunberg said, you know, we're not here for your permission or to get change. We're here to tell you that change is coming.
Absolutely. And I think what she's done, the rest of the youth movement, indigenous communities, has been incredibly important to waking everyone up that this isn't a technocratic discussion. This is, like we said, a social justice issue that is affecting people in the UK, yes, but around the world as well on a daily basis. So just kind of making it technocratic and talking about targets, important from an accountability perspective, for sure. But change is coming because people, like, humans are a selfish species, and unless we do something about it, we're going to go extinct. So I think we will solve it. I just hope we'll get there slightly faster than we seem to at the moment.